I hate to break it to you, but things aren't going to get any easier. People are always talking about what the magic pill is for attraction. If there was such a thing, it would be the two F's. Bar none, fitness and fashion will do more to attract women in a shorter amount of time than anything else. So listen up and make a serious commitment to yourself, because if you don't make a commitment to yourself, then nobody else will. Subsection: Fashion. Many straight guys are averse to exploring their style and how they dress because they think it's gay or intrudes on their masculinity. On the contrary, dressing well can help accentuate your masculinity and demonstrate that you value yourself. Studies have found that whereas men judge the physical attractiveness of women based on physical dimensions in their body, women judge men's physical attractiveness based on their clothes, their grooming, and their body language. Here are a few rules to dressing well. 1. Wear clothes that fit. 2. Match. 3. Choose good colors for your skin tone. 4. Accessorize. 5. Dress to your personality. Clothes that fit. To start, the vast majority of men don't wear clothes that fit them properly. Men prefer comfort and practicality to any aesthetic purpose of wearing clothing, so most of their clothing is too big. Many men are also self-conscious about their bodies, so they buy large clothing to mask it. Finding clothes that fit is the quickest and most immediate way to make yourself look more attractive. You should always know your measurements. If you're not quite sure, ask to get measured. Most clothing department stores have a tailor who will gladly take your measurements for you. With shirts, the shoulder seam should extend to the end of your shoulder and not any further. If it extends past the end of your shoulder, then the shirt is too big. The bottom of your pants or jeans should rest gently on the top of your shoes, unless you have a specific brand or rocker or hip-hop jeans. If you're stepping on the back of your pants with the heel of your shoe, then they're too long. If your jeans are raising up to expose your socks when you walk, then they're too short. Your pants should never sag from your waist when you wear them. Plumber's cracks are never attractive. Here's an example of jeans that don't fit. There's a picture here, but you can't see it right now. And another picture of jeans that do fit, a picture of a blazer that doesn't fit, a picture of a blazer that does fit. If you are listening to this and you'd like to look at these pictures, they are pages 177 and 178 in the ebook. Next section, matching. Guys have an unbelievable knack for being oblivious to colors and how to coordinate them. Matching is actually simple once you know what to look for. Your belt should match your shoes and/or your accessories. If you're wearing dress pants, your socks should match your pants. If you're wearing jeans, your socks should match your shoes. Your jewelry must be all gold or all silver. Here's an easy way to get started. Go out and buy a black set and a brown set. Buy a nice pair of black shoes, a nice black belt, and a black jacket. Then buy a nice pair of brown shoes, a brown belt, and a brown jacket. Then buy a few pairs of designer jeans with lighter and darker washes and a dozen or so shirts. Then it's just mix and match. You pick a pair of jeans, a nice shirt, and throw your brown set or your black set on, whichever set complements the shirts and jeans best. I like to wear the brown set with lighter shirts and jeans and the black set with darker shirts and jeans. Of course, dressing gets more complicated than this, but this is an easy and fail-safe way to start out. Just as everyone's built differently, everyone has slightly different skin tone and complexion as well. As a result, different colors will stand out on you and look good, and other colors will clash and look bad. For example, I'm Caucasian with a slightly darker skin and dark brown hair. The colors that look best on me are bright blue, green, purple, and maroon. Bright red, yellow, orange, brown, or gray all look bad on me. Below are some general guidelines of where to start with picking colors. As time goes on, though, you'll hone in on two or three colors that you look best in. It should also be noted that anyone and everyone can wear white and black. So, if you're dark skin tone, if you're of African, Indian, Middle Eastern, or darker Latino descent, you want to wear brighter colors to contrast and accentuate your features. What works? White, gray, pink, light blue, khaki, yellow. What doesn't work? Purple, dark brown, dark green, or any darker shade. If you're medium skin tone, a darker Caucasian, Asian, lighter Latino, lighter African, lighter Indian, or lighter Middle Eastern, you have the widest range of choices as far as colors, as most will complement your skin tone well. Earth tones and pastels look best on you. Burgundy, magenta, dark green, navy blue, light blue, black, or white. The colors to avoid are the one medium tones that will blend into your skin. such as tan, beige, dark brown, orange, and some reds. Example of good colors, medium skin tone. There's a picture there. It's page 181 if you'd like to take a look. Finally, light skin tone, light Caucasian or light Asian. The key is to avoid bright colors that will accentuate your light skin tone. Colors to avoid, red, orange, yellow, bright green. Pastels work well, light blue or earth green, maroon. Dark colors will never look bad on you. Finally, if you have blue, green, or hazel eyes, always favor shirts that match your eye color. Your eyes will appear to match your shirt and it will bring them out, giving them more of a sense of being more engaging. Accessorizing. The absolute quickest way to look more stylish today is to accessorize. It literally takes 30 minutes of shopping, yet completely alters your appearance. The fundamental accessories. Watches. Watches are the most fundamental male accessory. A nice watch goes a long way to augment one's style and status. But be warned, most nice watches are very expensive. Necklaces. Necklaces accentuate the neck and the shoulders, creating a sense of power and dominance. Anything from a simple chain to dog tags or a surfer's leather strap necklace can augment your outfit immediately. Bracelets. Whether metal or leather, make sure that they match the colors and style of your outfit. Bracelets accentuate your hands and arms. Consider them particularly if you're skinny and gangly. Rings. You can put a ring on any finger. A thumb ring is the most stylish and aggressive. Avoid pointer fingers and the left ring finger, for obvious reasons. Again, make sure the metal matches your other accessories in your outfit. Sunglasses. Go to a sunglasses store and try out a bunch of different pairs. Find a pair that complements your head shape nicely. Sunglasses cover the eyes, creating a sense of mystery and power in whoever wears them. Make sure the tint matches your outfit, i.e. don't wear a brown tint with a black outfit. And make sure the frames match the rest of your accessories, silver frames with silver accessories, etc. Piercings, tattoos, which are optional. Depending on your style and personality, piercings and tattoos can augment every outfit you wear more than any piece of jewelry could. If you're an artistic person or into particular music scenes, consider getting these done. Again, accessories are the quickest way to augment your appearance. You could throw on a t-shirt and jeans and look painfully normal. But add a cool watch, a couple rings, a necklace and sunglasses, and suddenly you look very stylish. Dress to your personality. Finally, dressing to your personality is important to understand that dressing well. I can't tell you how many guys I've seen who learn about fashion, who then go out and buy some crazy stuff. A 40-year-old business executive with baggy jeans and a hoodie, a 20-year-old college kid with a $500 suit and sweater vest, or just all kinds of random stuff. LED light belts, gold clock necklaces, top hats, etc. It's amazing sometimes what people think is being stylish when it's really just being ridiculous. You are not stylish if you are not dressing to your personality. In fashion, there are various stereotypes always considered attractive by women. The skater-surfer look, the businessman look, the rock star look, etc. For instance, if dressing like a rock star fits your personality, then do it. If you're a top accounting executive, you should dress like a stylish and successful businessman. If you love hip-hop and DJ, then you should dress with more of those trends. Look through magazines and get on the internet. Find people who look like your personality, then model after those people's appearance. For me, it was a combination of Rockstar meets GQ. I like looking stylish and put together, but with an artistic flair and edge to it because I'm a musician. I found brands that combine those elements. I would wear a hardcore rocker shirt with a nice blazer. It combined nicely with styled hair and some piercings. It worked for me because it was congruent to my personality. The other way you can model people's looks is by going out and observing people. Go to bars and clubs and look at the guys. Yes, I actually said look at the guys. Don't worry, it's not going to kill you. See which ones are best dressed. They're often gay. You'll quickly start to notice that, one, most guys don't dress very well at all, and two, the majority of guys in the venue who are dressed exactly the same way. This is how you don't want to be. Make a note of what most guys look like and try to either avoid that look or augment it in a way that's uniquely your own. Find the most stylish guys in the venue and make note of their style. You can even ask them where they got their clothes. Finally, if you're struggling to get a jump start on fashion, get a fashionable female friend to take you shopping. I shouldn't have to tell you that women love to shop, and they particularly love to shop for guys. Good female friends are your best asset if you're clueless about fashion. They can educate you and give you an unbiased female opinion on what looks hot on you and what doesn't. But be warned, just because she just because they have a vagina doesn't make them a de facto expert. Many women aren't as knowledgeable about fashion as they seem. Also, many women will try to dress you to their idea of a hot guy, not necessarily what works best for you. Fitness. Obviously, there's not enough time nor space to give the entire rundown on fitness, nutrition, and conditioning. So here I'm only going to provide the bare basics. This is enough to get you started. If you wish to pursue your fitness and nutrition further, and I recommend you do, there are recommendations in the further reading section at the end of the book. I'll divide this up in three ways: weightlifting, nutrition, and cardio. Most guys, when they want to get into shape, they focus on cardio first, weightlifting second, and nutrition last. This is completely opposite of importance. Whether you're looking to gain weight, lose weight, or simply tone up, nutrition is by far the most important, followed by weightlifting. 1. Lift weights. No excuses, lift weights. If you're trying to gain weight, all your gains will be stimulated by lifting. If you want to lose weight, lifting weights will raise your metabolism, burning more calories each day, and preventing any loss of muscle as you diet. If you simply want to tone up and maintain good health, weights will shape your muscle for a more pronounced physique. There's no way around it. Join a gym. Push-ups and sit-ups will not do. A pull-up bar doesn't count. Cheap 10-pound dumbbells don't count. Get to a gym and start lifting and don't stop. Weightlifting has been tied to so many physiological and mental benefits, it's stupid. One more time for the thick-headed and stubborn. You must lift weights to change your body. Once you get to the gym, start with machines if you're a novice, but move on to free weights as soon as you can. You want to focus on compound exercises. What this means is you want to do exercises that stimulate multiple muscle groups at a time. Too many guys show up at the gym, pump their biceps for 30 minutes, and then leave thinking that they worked out. They didn't do anything. Doing 3 sets of squats, bent rows, and pull-ups will yield much better gains in your biceps than curling a dumbbell all day will. These are the exercises you should focus on: squats, bench press, military press, deadlifts, leg press, back rows, pull-ups, and dips. You could start with these exercises 3 times a week, split between legs one day, chest and shoulders the next day, back and arms the third day. The reason you want to do these compound exercises is not only because they work more muscles at a time, but they stimulate your entire nervous system, which helps your body synthesize protein faster and more efficiently. A great newbie workout program is called the Ripto System, or Starting Strength. I fully recommend it. Also, if you can afford it, hiring a personal trainer to get you started towards your fitness goals is a great investment. 2. Nutrition. Consciously determining how much food and what food goes into your body is the most determining factor towards your health and your body's appearance. The first thing you must determine is how many calories you need to eat each day. This is easy. Take your weight, multiply it by 15 to get your daily maintenance calories, then subtract 500 if you want to lose weight, or add 500 if you want to gain weight. For instance, I weigh 180 pounds. 180 times 15 is 2,700. I must eat 2,700 calories a day to maintain my current weight, 2,200 a day to lose weight, and 3,200 a day to gain weight. If you weighed 150 pounds, you would eat 1,750 a day to lose weight and 2,750 a day to gain weight. Counting calories can seem like a big hassle, but it's pretty simple once you start learning how much is in each kind of food and what kind of calories are present in each of them. NutritionData.com is a great free site to help you start. Next, we must decide the proportions of calories to put into your body. This isn't as important if you're trying to gain weight as it is if you're trying to lose weight. Generally, if you're gaining weight, you want 40% carbs, 30% protein, and 30% fat. If you're losing weight, you want less fat and carbs and more protein. I'm going to leave the calorie proportions to other sites and guides. If you're that serious, you can look them up yourself. Instead, I'll make some general statements about what your diet should be. No fast food. There's way too much fat, way too much salt and cholesterol. This shit really is a nightmare for any health-conscious person, not to mention they come in ridiculous portions. No dressings or sauces. This means any salad dressing, mayonnaise, sour cream cheese, butter. All these things are pure fat and not the good kind of fat either. The exceptions are mustard, ketchup, jelly, and guacamole. Less cheese. Cheese is great, but it provides a lot of unnecessary fat. No fried foods. Again, it's all fat. That means French fries. Sorry. Bad carbs. Bad carbs include just about any grain or starch under the sun. Most breads, especially stuff like bagels, pastries, croissants, and muffins, potatoes such as French fries, even stuff like corn and rice. Cut out pasta if you can. There's a vast amount of research showing that processed carbs are what make you fat, not the actual fat intake. Less or no alcohol. Alcohol calories are useless to your body. They go straight to fat. No soda. The amount of sugar and sodium fucks with your metabolism and causes you to store more fat. Eat plenty of fruits and vegetables. Eat tons of lean protein, such as baked chicken, sirloin steak, baked turkey, cold cuts. No salami, pastrami, ham, bacon, or whatever. Eggs are great too, especially egg whites. Milk is good. Good fats, such as peanut butter, nuts, almonds, cashews, avocados, and also eggs. Take supplements, multivitamins, and fish oil. Buy some whey protein and consider getting some creatine. Constantly check with nutritiondata.com for what you're eating. You'd be amazed that what you think is healthy is actually unhealthy. 3. Cardio. First thing, under no circumstance should cardio be your only exercise. Well, I take that back. Cardio is better than no exercise. But if you're serious about chiseling your body into a modern-day Adonis, it won't suffice by itself. When you do cardio, not only do you burn fat, but you burn muscle mass as well. You must supplement your cardio with weightlifting to maintain your muscle mass while you're burning your fat. Second of all, you only want to do cardio if you're trying to lose weight or maintain your weight. Even then, it's the least important component and still optional. What cardio is great for is cardiovascular health, blood pressure, energy levels, etc. Cardio is pretty straightforward, so I'll only make a couple of comments. Walking for 30 minutes is not cardio. It may be if you're a 50-year-old woman and wildly overweight, but if you're in any reasonable shape, simply walking for 30 minutes is nothing. Elliptical machines are probably best for cardio as far as effort to calories burned ratio is concerned. They're really boring though. Running and intense swimming are the best ways to burn calories in the shortest amount of time. Unless it's 20 degrees outside, treadmills are pointless. You get half the work out of running as you do on a hard surface. Find the track and run outside, preferably. Don't run more than 3 times a week until you've been running for a while. Running takes a big toll on your joints and bones. You have to build up some tolerance to it. If you play a sport, it can be a perfect way to get your exercise in. Tennis, racquetball, basketball, soccer, etc. If you live in a big city, such as Chicago or New York, consider getting around by bike. It's convenient and extremely healthy. 4. Setting goals. The biggest problem people seem to have isn't setting an exercise regimen, but sticking to it. The best thing I can say is that to be patient and to focus on the practical benefits to your daily life you gain from being healthier. You feel better, you have more energy, you look better, you have more confidence. Don't get caught up in magic pills or expect results overnight. The most weight you can gain or lose healthily is 2 pounds a week. This sounds gradual and slow, but if you think about it, you can lose 15 pounds in a couple months. If you weigh 220 pounds, that's significant. So create a plan and take it one day at a time. Don't expect everything to change overnight, and don't be afraid of the pain period. Learn to love the pain. As my friend used to say, pain is the feeling of weakness leaving your body. Body language. Body language is something that can also be fixed in a relatively short amount of time and can immediately make you appear more attractive. There's a popular study that says only 13% of communication comes from the actual words we speak. The rest is body language and tonality. Think about that for a second. That's almost 90% of all communication. I shouldn't have to tell you how critical that is. To analyze your posture in this section, you'll need the help of a mirror, preferably a full body mirror. Start by facing the mirror and then turn 90 degrees to the right or left. You should have a perfect side view of yourself. Now look at the ridge that extends from your neck to the end of your shoulder. If you're wearing a shirt, look at the seam that extends from your neck to your sleeve. That seam or ridge on almost everyone will be slanted forward. Move your shoulders back until that ridge or seam is straight, going straight from your neck to your shoulder. It's the optimal position for your shoulders. Remember that position and remind yourself to hold your shoulders there as much as possible. Next, looking into the mirror with your shoulders back, raise your chin up until it's at a 90-degree angle with your neck. Your eyes should be looking dead ahead now, straight into themselves in the mirror, or aiming straight at the horizon as if you were walking. Make the back of your neck as straight as possible with your back. Notice when you pull your head up like this with your shoulders back, your stomach naturally comes in and your back naturally straightens up. This is what we want. Next, look at your feet. They should be shoulder width apart. Take note of which way your feet are pointing. They should be pointed straight ahead or slightly outward at the most. If they're pointed inward or very far outward, this will cause posture problems and make you walk funny. Turn them straight ahead or at a slight outward angle and hold them there. If they continue to point in or out, especially when you sit down, it means that your calf muscles are too tight and you need to stretch them out or roll them with a foam roller. Now it's time to walk. Hold the position you're in, shoulders back, head up, back straight, stomach in, feet straight, and then slowly step in front of you. As you walk, you want to swing your shoulders. Not too far, because that'll make you look ridiculous, but move your shoulders as you walk. This will create swagger and make you feel more relaxed as you walk. It will probably feel weird looking straight up and ahead while you're walking, but this is good. You want to be able to look everybody in the eye as you walk by them. Finally, slightly swing your arms. If you don't swing them, you'll look robotic. If you have them in your pocket, you're either cold or a pussy. If you swing them too far, you look ridiculous. Just give them a slight swing to go along with your swagger. There, exactly. Practice this a few times until you can remember how it feels. Take note of the feeling and then force yourself to go back to this position as much as possible. Go step by step if you must. As you walk down the street, and you remember, shoulders back, chin up, eyes straight, feet straight, shoulder swagger, arm swing. Always look straight ahead. Don't ever look down at the ground unless you think you're about to trip. Look at people in the eye as they walk by, particularly attractive girls. You'll catch people making eye contact with you. You'll feel the urge to look away. Don't. Always make other people break eye contact with you before you break it with them. Do it until it becomes a habit. These things don't change unless you consciously force yourself to do them over and over and over again. Keep practicing. Your body language can always be better. Vocal tonality. Moving on from body language, you'll never guess what research shows is the sexiest part of the male body. No, it's not a giant penis, or a tight butt, or rock-hard abs, or giant pecs. You'll never guess. It's a deep voice. Guys are spending hours and hours at the gym, obsessing over their biceps and bench presses, when the sexiest muscles in their body have always been in their throat. Studies have shown that the physical feature most correlative to attraction and sexuality is, yes, a deep, smooth voice. I couldn't believe it either. Vocal tonality is definitely overlooked by guys. It's not just having a sexy voice that's important, it's having an expressive and a loud voice. I've met too many guys with great looks and a lot going for them, but horrible voices. So let's get to work. Tonality. How do you get rid of that nasally voice? All it takes is some practice. We actually have two voices, a head voice and a chest voice. Basically, when you sing, your head voice does the high notes and the chest voice does the low ones. Your head voice breathes out largely through your nose, while the chest voice largely through your mouth. The head voice comes from the throat and the chest from the diaphragm. Try this exercise. Hum a note, then slowly raise it, and then slowly lower it. It should sound like a siren, up and down, up and down, up and down. As you do this, pay attention to where the air pressure is in your body. As you shift from high to low, it goes from your head to your chest, and then back up again. As you could guess, we want to develop that chest voice. Again, the only way to do this is through conscious practice, reminding yourself countless times to speak from your chest voice until it becomes a habit. Here's a cool exercise that you can do. Read the following sentence aloud. Why don't you come to the party with me? Now, hold your nose and read it again. I'm going to go ahead and do that right now. Why don't you come to the party with me? How different is your tonality? If it's not very different, you already speak largely from your chest and probably have good tonality. That means I have good tonality if you're paying attention. If you suddenly sound very nasally when you hold your nose and say it, you need to work on speaking with a deeper voice. Keep practicing it until you can say it with holding your nose and it doesn't sound any different. Cadence. Another problem guys have is that they often talk too quickly. This comes from a subconscious belief that if we don't get everything out quickly, people won't listen to everything we have to say. Forget it. It's much better to speak too slowly than to speak too quickly. There's not a definitive metric for this, but pay attention to if people seem to have trouble hearing you a lot. If people are constantly asking you to repeat yourself and it's not loud in the room, you may be speaking too quickly. Slow down. Be conscious of your speed and cadence. Don't be afraid to make people wait for your next words. Practice it. Volume. This is easy. You're not loud enough. What's that you say? You speak loudly already? You're still not loud enough. But people cringe when you speak. Louder. What? Louder. You're never loud enough. Ever. Practice it. But don't yell. There's a difference between screaming and being loud. You want to be loud. You don't want to be screaming. Eliminate hesitations. Try to eliminate any uhs, ahs, ums, likes, you knows from your speech. These are all place filler sounds designed to keep the listener's attention on you even while you're trying to think of what to say next. Get rid of them. Implementing both the body language adjustments and the vocal adjustments won't happen overnight. In fact, it will probably take a period of weeks or months to ingrain them fully as habits. But these things are monumentally important. Not only do better body language and vocal projection engage other people more effectively, but good body language has also shown to affect your moods positively when you alter it. So, as subtle as it is, it's a paramount lifestyle change that you need to make. It could possibly be the most important adjustment because every woman's first impression of you will be colored by how you carry yourself and how you sound when you first speak to her. Subsection: How to be fascinating. One thing that consistently holds guys back is that they come across as just another typical guy. We're pressured most of our lives to go with the flow, go along with what our friends like, and just agree with what those around us think. As we've discussed, this is what most people do, and it's needy and unattractive. Attractive men make their opinions known. They have unique experiences and ideas. They've tried things most people haven't tried, done things most people haven't done, and share their ideas openly and freely. This section is going to go over some basic life habits you can develop to help you invest in your own identity, to become more vulnerable in your everyday life, and to become more fascinating as an individual, and also to come across as more attractive to women. The areas we're going to cover are being well-read, developing artistic taste, and trying new things, and having opinions. Being well-read. If you don't read often, start. If you do read, read more often and read better books. Don't read airport trash or cheesy stuff like Stephen King. Nothing against him, but really. We're looking for literary merit. Sci-fi and fantasy don't count unless there's literary merit, such as Tolkien, Douglas Adams, or Arthur C. Clarke, for obvious examples. You want to focus more on the literature. Here's some names to start with. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Ernest Hemingway, Virginia Woolf, James Joyce, Vladimir Nabokov, John Steinbeck, Charles Dickens, Leo Tolstoy, F. Scott Fitzgerald, William Faulkner, etc. You may be rolling your eyes and thinking, this is like college all over again. No, there's a reason these authors are assigned the half of humanity to read at some point. It's just that we're too young and stupid to appreciate them when we do. Check out the best books ever written lists online. You'll get the name of a few dozen books coming up over and over again. Get familiar with them. Develop at least some sort of opinion about them. I respect Hemingway immensely, but I don't enjoy reading him. I think Dickens has some of the most inventive characters ever. Catcher in the Rye spoke directly to me in high school, until I realized that it spoke directly to everyone else, too. Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged changed my life in college. I think Bret Easton Ellis and Don DeLillo will be talked about decades from now. But we don't stop at fiction. Nonfiction is just as important, if not more important. Get interested in new subjects. Read up about evolutionary psychology, sociobiology, neurochemistry, and futurism. This stuff isn't your Chem 101 class from college. It's the cutting-edge ideas that we're learning and figuring out each day and every day. Learn what Einstein's theory of relativity means and how that relates to life and perception in general, or Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. A life without learning is a life without living. Do you want to be a successful person? The best way is to understand successful people. Read biographies. Read how Napoleon became who he was, or the trying leadership of Abraham Lincoln, or the neuroses of Benjamin Franklin. Now, the complaint I always get about this is, I don't have enough time to read that much. That's not true. That statement really means, I read too slowly to read that much. Speed up your reading. It's not hard at all. Study some speed reading. I once doubled my reading speed in a single day. Stop reading dumb blogs and ESPN and pointless magazines. Decide for yourself. How much value does what you're reading have, and does something else you could be reading have more value? If a 500-page book seems daunting to you, you read too slowly. Here are some tips to speed the process up. Once you get the point of a section in nonfiction, move on or skim the rest of it. This is huge. I will probably only actually read 2/3 of the actual words someone writes in a nonfiction book. If the book is written poorly or you don't enjoy it, stop reading it. It's okay. There's no reason to torture yourself. Just be sure you know why you don't like it. If a book only has a few chapters you're interested in, just read those chapters. If you feel like an author is being long-winded, skim sections until you get to a part that really interests you again. Push yourself to read as fast as you can without missing information. You can probably read twice as fast as you think you can. You just don't try too often. Use your finger underneath the lines as you read. Believe it or not, this will allow you to comprehend words faster. Averaging a book a week is doable without spending more than 30 or 60 minutes a day reading. I dated a grad student who read 3 books a week on average. One summer in college, I read a book a day for 50 days, all nonfiction and all on philosophy or various social sciences. It was actually probably one of the best things I ever did in my life. You read better and faster with more practice. After that, not only were my classes a breeze for the rest of school, but to this day I can plow through 300 to 400 page books in a couple days. Often I'll buy a book at an airport and finish it by the time I touch down at my destination, if it's a particularly easy read. Honestly, that summer has paid more dividends than I can tell you. The perspectives and ideas I had encountered were extremely varied, and I was able to relate complicated ideas in a myriad of situations with ease. It expanded my consciousness and my perception of the world, people, life, and why everything is the way it is. Relating to people became easier. It's probably what made me a good writer as well. Challenge yourself to become well-read. 100 books a year for 2 years. You can do it. It may be hard, but once you get used to it, not only is it enjoyable, it's incredibly enriching and you feel like a genius all the time. Artistic taste. When it comes to deciding what one likes and what one doesn't like, most men have very lukewarm reactions one way or the other. Yeah, that movie's awesome. Or, yeah, I like that one. Or, no, I don't like that show. It rarely goes beyond that. There's no sharing of why one prefers one type of music over another, one movie over another, one author over another, and there's no connection to the emotions that drive that preference. For instance, a random Joe may say, I really like Terminator. It was pretty cool. A more interesting person may say, Terminator was great, but what's more interesting to me is that it was the first movie I can remember in which you end up rooting for the villain. There's nothing wrong with being amiable and enjoying similar things to your friends, but one thing that will always make you stand out, particularly to women, is if you've not only expanded your horizons, but made your own decisions about your personal tastes, your experiences, and what you think about various types of art. Let's be real. Out of 10 guys the typical single woman meets, 9 of them are into the following things: sports, comedy movies, rock and/or hip-hop music, and typical guy activities. Again, there's nothing wrong with this, but what's going to make you stand out? We want to shape you into a man with taste, a man with opinions, and a man who can explain exactly why he likes or dislikes everything from 70s Motown records to German films to 19th century literature to impressionistic art. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to go tell you to take a bunch of art classes or whatever. You don't need to be a super intellectual snob. This is about developing your own opinions and enriching your life. When I say artistic taste, I mean art in the broad sense here. Music, movies, television, theater, art, poetry, literature. This is kind of an expansion on the first section. We want to be well-read so that we have a good knowledge foundation and that we are aware of the multitude of perspectives in the world. Now, we want to have a mature artistic sensibility so that we can develop interesting opinions on everything from slasher movies to romantic poetry to Angelina Jolie's ass. Too many guys let their opinions be dictated by pop culture and the group of guy friends. Oh, dude, Will Ferrell is so funny. The new Batman movie is really awesome. If you guys ever stop and actually think critically about what's being produced in Hollywood, or in record studios for that matter. But when you do, you suddenly stand out from the rest, and to women in particular. So here are some concepts to keep in mind as you go through your life experiencing art and media. 1. Assume everything has a form of value. It's your job to find it. Nothing drives me crazier than to meet people who are prejudiced against a genre of music or a type of movie for no other reason than that they don't particularly like the culture attached to it. For instance, hipsters who diss anything mainstream, as if music couldn't be both good and mainstream, people who criticize abstract art because, quote-unquote, a child could make that, or guys who hate on romantic comedies because they're chick flicks. I find the whole ironic hipster scene indie rock thing pretentious and obnoxious, but there's a lot of good indie rock and folk music out there, and I never would have enjoyed it if I hadn't given it a fair chance. I generally don't like chick flicks, but if they're done well, not ridiculous, and don't perpetuate horrible sexual stereotypes, I've been known to actually get in touch with my feminine side and enjoy a few. Love Actually is actually a guilty pleasure of mine, but don't tell anybody. Drop all this prejudice and adopt this mentality immediately. There has to be something to this form of art, otherwise it wouldn't have a following. So I should find out what that something is. Once you find it, then decide if you like it or not. Whether you like something or not, you should always be able to appreciate it. 2. Always expand your horizons. Start with what's considered the best. Some forms of art will come easily and naturally to you. It takes me literally 2 seconds to identify rock music that is transcendentally good or painfully bad. I've been listening to it all my life. Country, classical, bluesgrass, that took more time. About 7 years ago, I decided to get into hip-hop. I finally figured I was being stupid to brush it all off just because there wasn't singing involved. So what did I do? I went out and started with what was classically considered the best hip-hop out there. Tupac, Notorious B.I.G., Dre's The Chronic, among others. I listened to them until I started to get it. From there, I slowly expanded out to other artists, from older favorites to newer favorites like Outkast and Eminem, which were current at the time, until I got a handle on what differentiated different rappers from each other. You notice the different rhyming patterns, the uniqueness of the beats, the cadence, the lyrical themes. Once you make these differentiations, you have the ability to judge the quality beyond the simple, I like it, or I think it sucks. Do the same thing with movies. Watch every movie in the IMDb's top 20 movies of all time. Google Critics' top 10 movies of all time list and watch everything on there. Watch every movie that's won an Oscar for Best Picture. That's a good start. It blows me away how many guys in their 20s, or 30s for that matter, have gigantic DVD collections but have never seen The Godfather, Citizen Kane, Casablanca, or The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. How can you truly appreciate modern movies without understanding where they came from? Watch these movies and try to pick out what makes them so great. If it doesn't click, it may not be because it's a bad movie, but because you don't get it. This is like when people try to tell me that No Country for Old Men isn't good because it's slow and nothing changes. They completely miss the point. 3. Try to understand educated perspectives. As you're listening to new music and watching new movies, frequent the following websites: allmusic.com, metacritic.com, and rottentomatoes.com. Read critical reviews and observations. This isn't to base your opinion off of what the critics say. That's lame in its own way. But it's to gain perspective for things you may not have noticed before. If I'm particularly intrigued by a movie, I usually try to read a good review and a bad review to try and understand the point of view and why they felt the way they did about the piece of work. When you do this, this gives you greater understanding and interpretation of the art form. So future movies you see or albums you hear in that genre, you'll begin to notice things that you never did before. Like, oh, Al Pacino totally carried this movie. Or, the guitar playing isn't very inventive in this group, but the songwriting is great. Or, this TV show's concept is good, but the dialogue is lacking. Or, her singing is pitch-shifted and the beats are all redundant, etc. 4. Judge art based on its intentions as well as its result. This is what I call snob prevention. This is for people who may fall into the trap of trying to argue that a movie like Wedding Crashers is a bad movie because there's no greater philosophical statement or merit in it. Wedding Crashers isn't trying to make a greater philosophical statement. It's trying to make you laugh and feel a little good. And it accomplishes that extremely well. So it should be considered a good movie. Sure, comedies aren't as hard to make as a deep, probing movie like Citizen Kane, but that doesn't make them bad. The same happens vice versa. People base a movie's worth on whether it entertains or not. Art has a higher purpose than entertainment. The Hulk is entertaining, but it tries to be artistic and philosophical and fails. The Dark Knight accomplishes both. One's a lousy movie and one isn't. Both are very entertaining. This happens in music all the time as well. People who think Michael Jackson sucks because he sang cheesy lyrics over 2 chords. Well, he wasn't trying to be Duke Ellington. He was trying to make simple songs that would make people smile and dance and were incredibly memorable. Did he succeed? Absolutely. I've stuck mostly to movies and music as examples because I don't know much about art and I don't watch much TV. But the same concepts apply. Get a basic feel for what you like and what you don't. If you don't know what a big deal is about something, Google it and read other people's perspectives until you get a basic understanding. As for television, the same standards as movies apply. We're actually kind of entering into a new golden era of television. 5 years ago, you couldn't find a good TV show to save your life. Now they seem to be everywhere. I personally watch Californication, which is a character-driven drama struggling with masculine sexuality and intimacy, The Daily Show, which I think is the best political commentary on TV, and South Park. But I hear great things about Lost, The Wire, even stuff like Grey's Anatomy. Check them out and see what you think. The point in all this, too, is that it should be fun. This isn't homework. This is about finding cool stuff out there that you'll enjoy more and more. If you particularly like something a lot, hop online and learn a little more about it. This entire process should be enjoyable for you. Personal examples. I recently swallowed my vomit and checked out Sex and the City at a friend's recommendation. I had about 6 different girlfriends try to make me watch it with them, but I always refused. It actually wasn't that bad. Although the female characters were pretty solid stereotypes of women, for better or worse, I didn't find any of the male characters intriguing and the story arc was painfully slow across multiple episodes. So I stopped after 6 or 7 episodes. I imagine if I was less educated on relationships and romance, and maybe in my 30s, I'd find the show more interesting now. I also didn't get Lil Wayne's album from last year, The Carter 3. I had never listened to Lil Wayne before, but I sat down the other day and put it on repeat until I felt justified to form some sort of opinion on it. It took a while to get a handle on his rapping style. I read AllMusic's description of his eccentric personality and Wiki's entry on his rap career. Both helped me put his album in context as I discovered it's a richly colorful, inventive, and sometimes distracted album. The number of guests and producers he has is staggering by itself. Overall, I feel like I appreciate it, although I feel like it may have been overhyped. All in all, a good album which I'll listen to again. Trying new things. Before we finish up this section, you may be saying to yourself, this is all nice, but reading Hemingway or developing opinions on Chaucer or Bach will never get me laid in a dance club. Well, touche. Although, I'll make the following points. First of all, being a well-rounded individual is going to make you irresistible in the long-term dating context, not in the same night lay context. Therefore, this shit is gold for dates, girls you've been seeing for a while, and generally connecting with a girl deeply and keeping her around for a long time. Secondly, the second point I'll make is what my high school literature teacher always told us. You read literature because you can never meet enough people. What I take from this is, yes, even though reading Hemingway or Hayek's perspective on capitalism may not directly get you laid in a dance club environment, what it will do is develop your perspective to be more varied, allow you to be able to relate to more people's experiences and ideas, and generally have a wider body of knowledge for dealing with people in general. Anyone who has read a lot can tell you that often the best ideas you take from a certain book have nothing to do with the book you read. Anyway, with that said, moving on. Trying new things. This installment is to battle what I see in way too many guys. The guys who have been caged into the same day-to-day grind, wasting away, spending their life doing things they don't truly enjoy, and that don't truly express their identity and personality. They go to work, often at a good job, they come home and unwind, they watch typical sports, sitcoms, or movies, and on Fridays or Saturdays they hang out with the same 3 or 4 friends. Oftentimes I meet guys who don't even have this much variance and balance in their life. They're stuck in 60 or 80 hour a week jobs, or they work 2 jobs, or they have absolutely no hobbies outside of World of Warcraft. Now there's nothing wrong with the list above. It represents about 90% of the male population between ages 20 and 40 in the Western world. And that's the problem, because that means that you have the same amount going for you as 90% of the male population. No more, sometimes less. Ask yourself, if you were lined up next to 10 random guys from a bar you frequent, what would make you stand out from them? Most of them will be fairly educated. Most of them will have decent jobs. Most of them will have taken 1 or cool vacations here or there. Most of them will have 1 or 2 off-the-wall Vegas stories or something. What do you have that they don't? What can you offer that most guys can't? Do you secretly write poetry in your spare time and hide it in your closet? Have you been skydiving 3 times? Did you climb a glacier in the Alps once? Have you tried eating things like snakes, worms, spiders? What have you done that's cool and interesting and shaped you as a person? The possibilities are endless. So let's do an exercise. Take out a sheet of paper. On one side, I want you to take 10 minutes and list unique things that you have done or experienced that most people haven't. It could be everything from climbing a mountain, to writing your school's play in high school, to recovering from cancer, to going on a 10-day meditation retreat, to starting your own business in college. Write things that you've done that no one or almost no one you know has done or experienced. Now turn the paper over. Take 10 minutes and write all of the things that you want to do before you die on it. Assuming money and time was never an issue, list everything that you would do before you died. Some examples from my list. Write a novel. See the pyramids. Learn to box. Live in Japan. Speak 5 languages. Climb a mountain. Go nuts. Write until you can't think of anything else or until the 10 minutes are up. Now take a look at your list. If your first list has fewer than 10 things, you really need to get out more. If your second list has fewer than 10 things, you really need to put yourself out there and start trying new things and experiencing the world. You lack curiosity and ambition for quality experience. Pick 3 items from your second list and make it your goal to do them within the next year. In the end, working all day and night to have a great job and make a ton of money is a very superficial satisfaction. I don't need to tell you this. Enjoyment of life comes from varied life experience, not from possessions. This isn't some platitude either. Science backs this up. The more life experience you indulge in, the more developed a person you'll become, and the more mature your perspective on life and people will become. The easier you'll relate to women, and the more culture, worldliness, and value you'll seem to add to their lives. Also, the more you invest in yourself, the less needy you become around women, and the more attractive you become. Having opinions. A few weeks ago, I got a text from a former student saying something like, "I know this sounds stupid and obvious, but I just realized something. Simply having an opinion on everything makes you cooler than half the guys out there." It does sound obvious and kind of stupid, but it's true. There's a plague of indifference in our society. People who don't ever step up and really find something that they feel strongly about. Politics? Meh. Technology? Too complicated. Sports? My hometown. Art? Will Ferrell is funny. That's about as far as you can get. If this describes you, then that's fine. It's pretty much the status quo. But realize that it makes you just another guy. A dime a dozen. So why would an attractive woman pick you? And to our credit, this isn't something only guys are afflicted by. Ever gone out on a date with a girl who has nothing more to talk about than her latest favorite tanning salon and the weather? I have, tons of times. It's painful. Women suffer from chronic indifference as well. In fact, what may happen, actually what I hope happens to you, is that you take the advice from this article, start applying it, and within a year become a well-read, worldly, opinionated guy, and you'll email me because every girl you meet seems boring and plain suddenly. This is a very good problem to have. But back to being average. The reason it's so common stems from the same reason most guys have a lot of trouble with women. We've been conditioned to be passive, to be needy, and to hide our vulnerability, to be nice guys. If you don't have any strong opinions on anything, then you'll never ruffle anyone's feathers, never step on anyone's toes, never polarize and attract, because you'd rather not be disliked than risk being liked. What you're doing is emotionally shutting yourself off from yourself. And how can you emotionally connect with another person if you can't emotionally connect with yourself? So as an exercise in developing a little passion and learning how to stand for something, I want you to start doing this exercise. This is a lifestyle exercise that isn't done on a sheet of paper in 5 minutes, but it's a thought that I want you to keep in your head as you go about your everyday life. When topics, ideas, or thoughts come up, I want you to ask yourself, how do I feel about that? If you see some news coverage on Obama's stimulus package, ask, how do I feel about that? If you see the new South Park commercial, ask, how do I feel about that? If you hear that your friend is going to New Zealand, ask, how do I feel about that? You get the picture. Now, if you find yourself answering, I really don't care, push yourself to figure out something one way or the other. What I mean is this. My ex-girlfriend went on a rant once about some girl on Facebook who has a kid now. My ex-girlfriend was going on and on about how this girl was a single 21-year-old mother and how awful it was and how she's disgusted by it and how can that girl be happy, blah, blah, blah. Now, my first reaction, obviously, was, who cares? I really don't care if some trashy girl has a kid or not. And I really don't care if the only way I know about her is through my girlfriend's Facebook. But why is my ex-girlfriend going off about it? What did this girl ever do to her? I think my ex-girlfriend is more of an issue than the baby mama ever did. My opinion is that My ex-girlfriend needs to chill out and mind her own business. I said this, and although she got a little mad and defensive at first, my ex ended up agreeing with me and thanked me because my perspective really made an impact. I made her stop and think about her own feelings and biases, and that's rare. Most guys wouldn't do that. They'd sit there and nod and tell her girlfriend, "You're right, that's so messed up." No ruffled feathers, no one dislikes me. Another example, guy on the street corner handing out flyers for his church. He's one of these hardcore Bible Belt ministry types. I always brush past these people. I don't make eye contact. I don't say hello. I don't even stop if they stand in front of me. I walk around them. How do I feel about them? Nothing, really. I don't. But how do I feel about the entire situation? Well, honestly, I find it kind of admirable when somebody finds something they value so much that they're willing to stand on the street all day in hopes that they can share that something with one person. That's kind of cool. On the other hand, I really don't care to be that person. In other situations, it's just a matter of education. How do you feel about the election? Have no opinion? Well, try finding stuff until you do. Bringing it all together. Developing an attractive lifestyle is a long-term process. It requires a consistent and penetrating look at your actions, your habits, and what you've chosen to do with most of your time. Your job, your hobbies, your friends, your interests, are these things mostly a result of what was told to you or pushed on you? Are they things that you consciously evaluated and chose based on how enriching and passionate they made you feel? These are important questions. No one can live your life for you. And as long as you sleepwalk through life never questioning or evaluating the lifestyle that you've built for yourself, the same behavioral patterns are likely to creep up over and over again. Guys often don't totally believe me, but poor lifestyle choices afflict all of your interactions and communication when it comes to women. Poor lifestyle choices reflect a lack of investment in yourself, which in turn causes you to become more needy around others for validation. I first noticed this when I worked with guys who still lived at home with their parents. It was bizarre. These guys said all the right things, approached whenever they wanted to, could even flirt well most of the time. Yet they got absolutely no results. Women never responded warmly to them, and they never seemed quite as motivated or as confident. Then, a few months later, I went home and lived with my mom for about 6 weeks for personal reasons. During this period, I noticed the same thing. My motivation to meet women plummeted. My confidence and sense of independence became nothing. I didn't seem excited in my interactions. But as soon as I left and lived on my own again, everything came back. There's a certain baseline level of independence and self-sufficiency that your lifestyle must give you for you to be able to move forward. If you're constantly stressed by work, upset by your friends, and in poor health, then no amount of work on your anxieties and communication is going to help much. You're effectively putting a ceiling on your development and your potential with women. The other two sections of this book will not be much use to you in that case. You can try, but I can tell you, you probably won't see much change in your result. Get your life taken care of. Get healthy. Find a happy group of friends. Find a few hobbies that you love. Develop opinions. Start caring about what you spend your time doing. This increases your self-investment and will make you less needy around others. This in turn will give you the courage to take correct action and the wherewithal to communicate effectively. This is honest living. And once you're living a life true to yourself, your values, and your ideals, then it's time to take action. Part 4, Honest Action. Chapter 10, What Are Your Stories? Life shrinks and expands in proportion to one's courage. Anais Nin, writer. I parked my car in front of the gym and immediately popped my iPod headphones into my ears. As I get out and walk across the parking lot, I catch a glimpse of a slender figure walking toward the door from another angle. I look over. She's hot. We catch eyes and hold. She looks away, but only after holding my gaze for half a second longer than most people would. An instant of sexual tension pops up between us. She walks into the gym about 10 paces ahead of me. I check out her ass. It says pink. It's those fuzzy kind of tight sweatsuits girls wear sometimes. My mind immediately judges this. For some reason, I think she is trashy. I have to stop myself. What do I know? For a moment, we're at the sign-in desk next to one another. I start scanning my mind for something to say to her. But before I settle on something, her phone rings and she answers it. Oh God, one of those girls, I instinctively say to myself. Again, I have to stop myself. I don't know this girl, but obviously if I'm dedicating such mental energy to her, I probably should. For a few seconds in my head, I toy with some logistical scenarios that would allow me to open her later, like pretend I have to go to the bathroom so I can come back and hopefully catch her off her phone. No, that's too contrived. I could just approach her in the gym while we're working out, but to be honest, that has never gone well for me in the past. Or maybe I do my workout and try to time it so that I'm leaving when she is. Then I would feel like a stalker. Theoretically, these things could work, but my mind's losing interest. My headphones are blaring, and I've moved on to my workout for the evening. I'm not going to lie and say that despite all my hedging and indifference, that I magically came up with some miraculous opener that saved the day, because I didn't open her. In fact, I don't remember seeing her again or thinking of her until I wrote this. So I didn't save the day. But then again, there was nothing wrong with my day, and there still isn't. I'm also not going to sit here, as is typical with these types of books, and chastise myself for bitching out, for being a pussy, and for not manning up. It's not that big of a deal. And I'm also not going to give you, my humble reader, yet another lecture on how you should never bitch out, how you should always, always, always open, no matter what, you fucking pussy. Even if she's at the gym, on the phone, juggling knives, doing a handstand, changing a flat tire, or administering CPR, you always fucking open, goddammit. Right? Let's be honest, we all pass up dozens of situations like the above one on a weekly basis, no matter how experienced or inexperienced we are. We've all let hundreds, if not thousands, go, usually without a thought. We've all done it, and we'll all continue to do it. So I'm not here to rail on you to stop passing up on opportunities. You already know the opportunities that you pass up, and I'm sure by now you've had more than your fill of woulda, coulda, shoulda moments. You don't need me to tell you when you should have gotten off your ass and done something. I'm more interested in the stories you tell yourself, the stories that we all tell ourselves. Allow me to explain. When I got into this stuff 6 years ago, I've struggled with approach anxiety as much as anyone I've ever met. I've coached well over 150 guys since then, and I've maybe only met 3 to 5 guys who've had worse approach anxiety than I did when I started. Jump to today. I really rarely experience approach anxiety consciously anymore. That isn't to say that I'm some sort of badass. I put in my time. I paid my dues. A lot of it was fun, and a lot of it sucked and was humiliating. But I did it. I grew, and I'm a better person for it now. Through the basic rote exercise of approaching thousands of women in the most basic or ridiculous scenarios over the years, most of that palpable fear, the hand sweating, the fast breathing, the mind going blank, most of that is gone. What's not gone, and as far as I can tell, what will never be gone, is a continued internal resistance to change, whether it be through outright fear or subtle subconscious thoughts trying to sabotage me. That never stops. I don't feel nervous anymore, but I do feel a dreadful judgment and boredom. Only prissy girls wear crap like that. Or, oh god, she's one of those girls who's always on her phone. I don't have time for this. Sometimes it happens pre-approach. Sometimes it happens 30 minutes in. Sometimes it happens on the second date. But always, these judgments aren't accurate portrayals of her. I don't even know her, yet I'm judging her. It's a defense mechanism. My conscious fear has disappeared, but my subconscious resistance is still alive and kicking. And from what I've observed, everybody's subconscious defense mechanisms are still kicking. The resistance doesn't go away. It just changes shape. Over the years, the anxiety morphs into an apathy, which morphs into an arrogance. The resistance may come while approaching or while escalating or before having sex or when you want to commit to a girlfriend. We all have our own weak spots, and those weaknesses have their own form resisting the change we want. One boundary simply gets pushed back into another and another. Whether you feel incredibly nervous before you approach, or if you procrastinate calling girls you've met, or if you tell yourself that you just don't feel like having sex when you're out on a date with a girl, even though she's obviously into you, this is your subconscious resisting change. And your mind is inventing stories to explain that resistance. These stories have emotions tied to them, whether they're fear, boredom, anger, shame, or whatever, which serve to supplement keeping you in the same place you are right now. It's your emotional inertia. It's the status quo. The mechanisms wired into you to keep you there, safe, and we all have them. Here are some other stories I've been telling myself lately, that I'm too good for these girls. It's my subconscious's favorite story right now. I tell myself, I've been with 25 girls hotter than her, so why should I even bother? Yes, I recognize the myriad of things that are wrong with that thought. Yes, I realize I'm totally pompous and full of shit when I think that. But that's my point. We're all full of shit. A lot. All of our stories are, and we listen to them most of the time. We believe them. I know mine's dumb, just like yours probably is too. But that's what pops into my head. That's the excuse I have to fight through these days. And for me, this one is a constant battle. Another one that's been surfacing a lot is that I don't